Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning again, everyone. You know, New York City Mayor Fiorella LaGuardia once made the point that the job of government is not ideology, but simply to serve the people. He said he made the point by saying there's no liberal or conservative way to take out the garbage. You know that quote? I actually think he was wrong about that. You know, there's recycling and there's incineration and dumping, but that's another show. The question we'll ask now is there a liberal and conservative way to fight inflation? It's the number one issue for many Americans in the midterm elections, according to many polls, and if not number one, inflation is at least way up there for just about everybody. But the question is how? And do Democrats and Republicans have different approaches that have different pros and cons? We'll explore that question now with University of Chicago economist Austin Goolsbee, who, as some of you know, is chairman of the Council of Economic Advisors for President Obama. Austin, great to have you on again. It's been a minute. Welcome back to WNYC.
Thanks for having me back.
And I'll say right at the start, to give credit where it's due, that we invited you on to continue a conversation you were having with NPR's Aisha Roscoe this weekend on Weekend Edition Sunday. One of the things you said was that one of the roots of inflation we're seeing now is that the COVID recession that we've now come out of wasn't really a recession. Could you go over that again to start out? I was glad that that you brought that up with Aisha. How can a recession be not a recession?
Well, this is what I think, and in fairness, there are many economists who disagree with me, but I think it was a serious downturn, but it looked nothing like a recession in that recessions are driven by things that we call, the market calls, the cyclicals, cyclically sensitive sectors of the economy, like manufacturing of durable goods and autos and housing construction and stuff like that are what lead to recessions. They're the ones that go down the most, and in the comeback, they're the ones that go up the most. And this time, we had a serious downturn of the economy, but all of that stuff went up. So people bought more cars, they bought more TVs, they try to buy more housing, because there was nothing to do. The thing that led to recession was the downturn in a bunch of industries that have never really had a recession before, like going to the dentist and going to restaurants and personal services. And so that makes it weird. That makes the Fed's job, it makes everyone's job very difficult trying to figure out how do you get out of this.
Because it's such a different kind of recession,
yeah,
with different sectors.
There's no data. We don't know how fast are people going to take twice as long of vacations this year because they've been several years not being able to take a vacation. Stuff like that matters for how overheated you think the economy is going to be and how hard the Fed needs to step on the brake. But there's no past data that you can ask. How does that happen?
I guess the lack of data is why you also said on Sunday that there's almost a religious battle, you use that term, that's taking place among economists over how inflation got this bad and what to do with it. So can you talk about the sides in that religious battle and why you use that term, which suggests that it's more of a matter of belief than of evidence?
Yeah, that's why I used it. And then, in the NPR way, they said, oh, that's not a religious battle. That's a religious schism. So, okay, so now I'm going to use schism. That is kind of what it is, a religious schism. We don't have data to base this on. And so the schism is really, and it's more than just a kind of an academic point, as I'll describe in a second. What your belief is on this schism matters a lot for what you think the government should do to respond to the inflation. So the schism is one side says that fundamentally what happened here, how we got this much inflation, is we had too much demand. And we had stimulus coming from the Fed. Rates were extremely low. And we had stimulus coming from the federal government. They passed the CARES Act under Trump of $5 trillion. And then Joe Biden passed the American Rescue Plan, another $2 trillion. And fundamentally, those two things overheated the economy. And the other side of the schism says, wait a minute, isn't a big component of this supply side, cost side problems? The supply chain is messed up. The price of oil is through the roof. The labor supply into the service sector is heavily repressed because people either got sick or didn't want to get sick, so they wouldn't go to work. And if it's supply shock, then the Fed can raise the unemployment rate, but it won't make the inflation go away. Because the inflation in that world is not coming from too much demand. And the Fed, for all of the discussion of its power and what is the Fed going to do, the Fed really has only one tool. And the Fed's tool is all a variant of raising the interest rate to try to slow down the interest rate sensitive sectors of the economy.
And to normally, slow down the demand when in this case, the problem is too little supply.
It might be too little supply. So the thing is, normally when the Fed tightens, they just have one screwdriver. And so the thing is, tighten the screw or loosen the screw. And that's great if your problem is a loose screw. But it's not great if you need to saw something or you need a hammer. And that's kind of the dilemma of, if you think that most of this inflation is coming from the supply side, then the Fed tightening conditions to reduce demand in interest rate sensitive parts of the economy is not going to fix that problem.
And it causes pain, as Aisha pointed out to you on Sunday, you know, raising the unemployment rate as a solution to inflation may look good on paper, but it causes real people real problems.
Look, there's no doubt about the pain. And if you look back to periods like the early 80s, when Paul Volcker acted not alone, everyone understood inflation was much higher than it is right now and had been going and was accelerating. And so they said, we must administer pain to get inflation expectations down and to stop the snowball. And that's the thing that I call the two angels on the shoulder. You know how they got the angel and the devil?
Mm-hmm.
One of them is the supply side argument that says, whoa, wait a minute. Don't tighten too fast. You'll just generate a stagflation. Because if the inflation's coming from supply, tightening and reducing demand won't work. But the other side says, we learned in the 1970s that if inflation goes for too long, then and everyone begins expecting inflation is going to remain high, then it's extremely difficult to get rid of inflation. And so we should raise the interest rates right now because it's coming from too much demand and we could prevent it from getting rolled into the expectations. And so the two angels are like, they're the devil. No, they're the devil. Listen to me. And I think that's why the Fed has been slow to act, not paralyzed, but just slow to act. And now I think the Fed is scared. The latest inflation numbers showed that what the Fed looks at is not what you or I or the regular person looked at. We tend to look out and say, what's the price of gas and how much is food? And, you know, for your daily things that you buy, what's happening to prices?
Mm-hmm.
The Fed excludes energy and food prices when it looks at inflation. It looks only at what it calls core inflation because energy and food are extremely volatile. They go up, they go down, they're all over the place.
Yeah.
And so the Fed has over the years decided that core inflation is the better indicator of what's actually happening. And core inflation is supposed to be going down. What we needed, what we need for this summer is for the non-energy and food part of inflation to start coming down to give us some comfort that, nah, look, this was ultimately a shorter lived thing, not a permanent thing. And what happened in the last inflation number is the core inflation didn't go down. Separate from the gas prices and the food prices, that core went up, and that got the Fed spooked. That got the stock market spooked, because everybody looks at that and says, whoa, if we get one or two or three more months like that, then they're going to go get the tarot cards and try to consult the ghost of Paul Volcker. You know, they're going to have to raise rates a lot. And so I kind of think that's where we are. And that's why the schism is not just an academic point. This question of what share of this came from supply and what share came from demand absolutely matters for how much you think the Fed should raise the interest rate.
So we are talking about whether to use a saw, a screwdriver, or a hammer to fight inflation.
You
as
have to
we
bang
are
yourself
in,
on the head.
We are in Economy Shop with University of Chicago economist Austin Goolsbee, former chairman of the Council of Economic Advisors for President Obama. I wonder, in our remaining few minutes, listeners, if there's anybody in any kind of business who has a supply side story to tell us about things you can't get or can't get as much of and how that's pushing up prices as opposed to demand. Because that's sort of the organizing principle here, that it's a supply shortage driven inflation as opposed to just people wanting to buy too much stuff. So is anybody listening? Just casting a net here. We'll see if anybody jumps in, and this sounds like you. Anybody in any kind of a business where prices are going up because of supply shortage, I guess, other than food and energy. 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692, or tweet at Brian Lehrer. Austin, do you want to put your own cards on the table in this economist religious battle, as you put it, for transparency? Are you a believer in either of those faiths?
I have been more in the camp of supply, and I have thought that the main supply shock, everybody looks and sees the ports and sees the computer chips and stuff like that, but I think that the biggest supply shock has been to the supply of workers to the service sector. And when you don't have a supply of workers to the service sector, it severely limits what people can spend money on. Normally, we spend most of our money on services. And during this whole thing, we shifted to physical goods. And of course, that overloaded the supply system for physical goods, because they can't handle that. If everybody's says, I can't go do my normal, spend my normal money on leisure and entertainment and medical and blah, 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 I want a big TV, of course there's going to be a shortage of TVs. Or I want fluffy toilet paper at home, of course there's going to be a shortage of toilet paper, because the demand for residential toilet paper went way up, and they don't, in the short run, have a way to satisfy it. Now, I will say, the last couple of months that core inflation hasn't come down, I have revisited what share of this comes from supply. I still think supply is important. Mm-hmm. And I think the fact that you're seeing the inflation happen around the world, and that the producer side inflation has been higher than the consumer side inflation, all of those things suggest that the supply side is a worldwide phenomenon, and there's an important component. But there's got to be some excess demand, too, because this core inflation is going the way it is.
I think we have a story here from Daniel in Manhattan. Daniel, you're on WNYC. Hi there.
Hi. I own a fine restaurant, and I ordered fine wines. And my wine bill just came in the other day, and it was over 40% of what it originally is. And the reasons given by the distributor is that the shipping container costs going from France to America has gone from $5,000 to $18,000. So for my $800, I got three cases instead of five cases. That's how much it went up. And there's nothing, the grower didn't get more. My distributor didn't get more money profit. And I'm certainly not making more profit. And I already heard it from my customers over the weekend that they were pretty angry at the new prices.
Why is the container shipping going up? Do you know?
No, nobody can figure it out. It's just the shipping companies that said this is what it's going to cost. And that's what it is. And the distributor here had to pass the cost on to us.
And you're stuck, and then the wine drinkers are stuck. One more story. Sam in the Hudson Valley, you're on WNYC. Hi, Sam.
Hi. So I run the operations for a general contracting company. We build large warehouses, and I bring in everything from glass to sheetrock to steel from all over the country and from overseas. To the last caller's point, actually, containers went up because things were closed for so long. And then when people all came back, everyone had all this stuff to ship right away to meet deadlines. And then also, if you remember, I'm old enough to remember a year ago, one of the headlines in California was that the port was so backed up that they weren't even able to bring things in. Ships were waiting out in the ocean for around 4 months, just sitting there. So... But one thing I wanted to say about supply, there are things actually that have started in the last 6 weeks. There are things that have started to actually get better when it comes to supply. Costs are up, but that's probably more to do with inflation than anything else. Costs are up, but the thing you'll find is that a lot of subcontractors, the guys who sell you the glass, the guys who sell you the different materials, they know that supply is such a thing in the news right now that they actually use it as excuses for totally other things. They'll tell you, hey, I can get you something in 10 weeks. And then when they all of a sudden, it's 12 weeks, you call them and you say, what's going on? And it's really just because they didn't pay someone on time or who knows what they did. They'll say, yeah, supply chain issues.
And then are they also raising the prices on you just because they can?
There are people who say, you know, oh, yeah, you know, costs went up and costs are going crazy. But if you're a good general contractor, if you're a good businessman, it probably applies anywhere. You'll end up calling, you know, seeing if you can get quotes from the material yourself, and you'll weed those guys out who are lying. But it's harder to know when they actually bought something and you're bringing something in from Greece. You know, it's harder to know. Before Corona, a shipping container, 40-foot shipping container from Greece, used to cost $4,000. Right now, that same container costs $9,500. And in China, it was much worse. A Chinese container before Corona, before 2020, March of 2020, could cost anywhere between $3,500 to $4,000 for a 40-foot container. At some point, you know, early 2021, around a year ago, at its worst, it was $20,000 for that same container.
Sam, that's a very bracing story. Thank you for sharing it. And there are others, Austin, if we had time, which we don't. I'm just looking at our caller board.
Yeah, these are
somebody saying, I'll go through a couple of these just as bullet points. Somebody calling from a tree, shrub, and lawn business, fertilizer and insecticide in short supply. An architect and roofer calling saying can't get roofing materials. Someone else, an ad agency, who works at an ad agency for alcohol companies, says you can't get glass. So all of these. And I wish I had another like hour and a half with you, because there are so many other things that I wanted to ask about. But let me pick up on that last point from Sam, just to ask this. And for you, as someone who worked in a progressive administration for President Obama, there's a Robert Reich tweet out there that says, let's be clear, inflation is being driven in large part by monopolies that are driving up prices for the sake of profit. And the example he gives is, last year, Procter & Gamble raised prices on staples like diapers and toilet paper, citing increased costs. After some of its price increases went into effect, P&G reported an almost 25% profit margin. So he says it's not inflation, it's the monopolization of America. So obviously it's a lot of different things. But is there something that the government could do to prevent the price gouging, the taking advantage, because we all expect inflation now, from taking place?
I don't think so. Rob Reich and I are old friends, and I respect him very much. I don't agree with his read on the maybe I call it the causality of what caused the inflation. It is the case that he's not wrong that we've had a increase in consolidation and monopoly power, let's call it, in a lot of industries in the U.S., and that problem got worse in many ways during the pandemic, because a lot of small businesses just kind of ceased to exist, and big tech companies got bigger and things like that. And it is true that you have seen prices go up by more than costs in some industries. So the margins, the business margin, actually increased. But the question is there some policy thing you could do to change the margins? Sometimes it tempts people into the argument of let's go back to the Nixon era price controls, mm-hmm. where we would forbid any price increases. I think that's a terrible mistake. I mean, if you listen to the callers, it was a failure when we did it in the 1970s. And the reason it was a failure is the reason it's always a failure. You listen to the callers and just the granular level of detail that they have, they're like, I need this certain kind of green glass to make the bottles and I can't get that and the price is up. There is no, the level of information required to try to prevent mass shortages, mm-hmm. that have spiraling and snowballing effects on the economy, just far in excess of what the government can handle. So if you start putting in price controls to control one thing, it's going to have knock-on effects on every industry that uses that thing. And it's really, I think that would be a mistake.
Well, I don't think we've solved it here today, but at least maybe we understand a little more of what's going on out there. Austin Goolsbee, University of Chicago economist, who was also the chairman of the Council of Economic Advisors for President Obama. We really appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Yeah, great talking to you again, Brian.